That was a long intro for a woof sound effect. But anyway.
That was like the remix version of a wolf.
But anyway, I want to tell you about our main sponsor on the show, and that is Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F Nation. So much different apparel, so many sweet shirts, long sleeve, short sleeve, V-neck, collars, whatever you want. And if you got to go to Wolf Nation on Instagram, you can find them on Facebook. So check them out. They should be coming up. Please support a nice local brand. And they help us out a lot here on the podcast, so we want to help them out. Wake up, live free.
I mean, he's still a new business, but he keeps putting out new swag and new clothing. And
there's nothing that makes me happier than hearing you say swag.
Yeah, I feel I can get to the youth community by saying swag.
Yeah. What's funny is no one wants you near the youth community, as you would
call
it.
Yeah, I kind of found that out.
The hard way. Hard time. But anyway, wake up, live free. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, mates, all yous listening out there. This is Diggsy, your favorite little drunk from Avalon. Just telling you, listen to Verbal Shenanigans. It's a hoot.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
That sound mean we're back?
Oh, yeah. I think that's my least favorite part of the podcast, is coming up with some new way to say, hello, we're back. It's like, oh, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. Like, you know what it is when you click it. Or
maybe we should get
like recent listening numbers when you don't click it.
Yeah. We can get like a choir of people to sing Verbal Shenanigans.
I thought, well, you know, maybe we can
Come up with a song and get the choir at the same time.
Well, maybe when you visit the black church, if you want to knock some points
true.
Out.
That's true.
We can get them going.
Listen, I know we're talking about God today, but I really need a theme song. This all yeah thing is just not working.
But anyway, people, yes, welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. It's a happy, fun little podcast that we like to do weekly. And welcome back, Mike Berlew.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be back.
Good stuff. It's weather's breaking a little bit.
Well, actually, we might get snow on Friday.
Shut up. I could smell the baseball. I can smell the baseball in the air. It's coming. Are you excited for another Phillies season?
Well, that's the rank smell I'm getting looking forward to. I mean, at least I can sit back and go, this is a rebuilding season. We know what we're going into. We pretty much, our goal is not to lose 100, and that's about it. So.
Yeah. But
but you went through the same thing, so.
Oh, yeah, for decades. But, yeah, I guess I'll go right into the first thing I want to get into.
All right.
This actually stemmed from a couple episodes ago. We never got into it. We said we would. But we never continued it. If you remember a couple episodes I played a Phillies baseball song.
It was okay.
Several episodes ago. But
I remember that, yeah.
And I said, you know, we should look into some other songs. Team songs, the worst ones, like, imaginable. So I have some. I thought that maybe we could take a listen to and dissect a little bit. But let's get a little inspiration from your Philadelphia Phillies.
Okay.
Don't worry, I got two of my teams on this list I have here.
All right.
This was the Philly song, sadly, released a couple of years ago. Not even in that 80s era where everything was terrible.
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with this one, to be honest.
It's called the Philadelphia Philly song.
The concrete subsides, a million fans on their feet. There's a town marching down to the bank on Broad Street. 30 years worth of tears, bleeding ears, here I please turn it up, tune it in.
It's not really a rallying cry song.
Nah, it's more of like a church song.
Yeah. I can't imagine being down by 3 runs and playing this song. It's like, damn it.
Top to sky, bleeding red, do or die, we won't know till we try. Gonna
take this tonight, fighting darkness to light. Don't give up. That's too deep for a sports song.
Yeah. And we
won't. Here we go. Down around and back again. Stand my ground and breathe again.
How's this the Philly song?
I don't know. What's funny is when I play it on YouTube, there's like pictures of like Jimmy Rollins and Cole Hamels like slowly going
fading away to another team.
Well, this was the 2011 Philadelphia Phillies playoff anthem. Oh,
wake me up when September ends.
Know. Maybe does it have Phillies lyrics? Is it come and pass, the lesser
teams will never last. Like the Phillies? Wake me up
when September ends. Oh my god, I just get the douche chills listening to that. Oh, that must be
Yeah, we gotta work Philadelphia on this kind of thing. I gotta be honest with you.
Well, you know, this isn't a Philadelphia rip session because that would be going after the easy. There is a Philadelphia team, so maybe we'll start there.
All right.
Okay, the Eagles. Okay, the Eagles. You familiar with the 1988 Eagles, Mike Berlow?
I'm sure I could name some players off of that. But
you know, 3 years after, you know, we're not going to play the Super Bowl shuffle. We've heard that a million times. This is the 1988 Eagles. You know?
Is this the Fly Eagles Fly song?
No, this is Buddy's Watching You by the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
So,
Buddy Ryan, I did love that coach.
Yep. So why don't we...
yeah, go ahead.
Why don't we take a listen? Mm-hmm. Here are the Philadelphia Eagles pumping up their fans in 1988. And it's all black dudes in like leather outfits and cheerleaders. If you want to look at
that. Yeah. The production.
I love
epic rap battles of history.
Every bad like team rap song. This is the cadence of it. Every single one. He's got his sunglasses on inside.
Oh. I just imagine like an 89 Eddie Murphy movie playing. Like Axel Foley is like behind a car trying to sneak up to the spies.
Yeah, I love the girl. The backup singers are really into it. They're hanging on every word. They show like the guy mixing on the mixing board, really adjusting everything to make sure it's, you know, perfect for the 1988 Eagles.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Buddy Ryan brought him to the playoffs 3 years in a row, and they lost in the first round 3 years in a row.
So we're not going to play the whole song, so you get an idea. That was Buddy's Watching You.
I think our viewership can't get any lower.
Let's switch to hockey.
All right.
Let's go to hockey. Hockey season's in full effect.
Gear,
Devils made
close.
A whole bunch of trades. They're in absolute rebuilding mode, gutting everything and getting younger and younger. But
yeah, they still got a shot for the wild card.
Yeah.
I think we got the same amount of points, but you played two more games than us.
So let's go up to our friends in the north. Let's go to Calgary. Okay.
Oh.
The Calgary Flames, okay? This song is called Red Hot by the Calgary Flames, okay? It doesn't give me a year, but it says in the 80s.
That's all I need to know.
Because you can't touch this flame when it's red hot. Here we go.
You don't even need to play the song. I know this is going to be wonderful.
They're showing celebration. Flames just won something.
Obviously not recent.
Here we go, baby. Like every Canadian person's getting off their seat right now. Like. showing a bunch of guys playing trumpets. I swear to God, I hope that's Flames players, because that would be the best thing ever.
I would make a joke, but nobody knows a Calgary Flames player.
Joel Otto.
Oh.
You got to see the guy singing. He's got a huge red mustache. I hope that's a hockey player. It's got to be.
It looks like an 82 video, you know, a music video. It's like Flock of Seagulls, the Canadian Flock of Seagulls.
Oh, I think we're getting to the hook. Here we go. Oh, no, maybe it's a double verse, then a hook. Oh my God, look at this. There's two guys playing keyboards and four guys in the back clapping. We gotta post the links to these.
Yes, yes. This is the most beautiful.
It's all these guys with Fu Manchu. This has to be the players. Because they're all ugly and white. Come on, where's the hook here? Here we go. It's gotta be now. Red hot. Woof. Yes, yes. That's the Calgary Flames. Red hot.
Now I see a training montage of an 85 movie going on during that.
Yep. So if you want to, I'm sorry we're not playing the whole thing, but if you want to indulge in it, go look that up on YouTube.
Yeah. Just remember, can't touch a flame when it's red hot.
Yeah. Let's shift to the sport of soccer.
All right.
Sport of soccer.
Now, a lot of great chants in soccer.
A lot of great chants, a lot of fun ones. Mm-hmm. But I think when you go from chant to song, that's when things get a little messy. So we got two messy ones here. One from both teams that I love in soccer, which is Liverpool.
All right.
And the United States.
Ooh.
Okay. So we're going to start with the Liverpool. This is called the Anfield Rap by Liverpool FC.
Oh. If I want to listen to a rap song, I go straight to England.
I go straight to soccer players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This one I listened to. I didn't listen to all these before. I listened to a couple. This one hurts my spine. Like, it's so bad. All right, here we go.
FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal. Watch my lips and I will spell. Because they don't just play, but they can rap as well.
I beg to differ.
My idea was to build Liverpool into a bastion of invincibility.
Liverpool FC. Oh my God, oh my God. Here we go.
Napoleon had that idea. He conquered the bloody world.
Now, for those of you who don't know, who are not soccer fans, that is them singing the You'll Never Walk Alone, which is the Liverpool, like, song they sing before each song, but they're singing it
Did
now
Lisa
to a
Loeb
rap beat.
Sing that song, You'll Never Walk Alone.
All I know, those sounds is a pound. I'm Kustila, but there's nothing down.
The rest of the lads ain't got it sussed.
We'll have to learn them to talk like us.
Well, I'm rapping now, I'm rapping for fun. I'm your goalie, the number one.
I'm your goalie.
Don't call me a clown. Any more lip and you're going down.
So bad. Not only was it littered with stereotypes.
That was,
listen to it talk. I can't do it like us.
That is like just when Run DMC came to England and everybody's like, oh, okay, I get it. If we rhyme, we're rapping.
Yeah. I can't wait to post this one. I'm just going to post it on my own personal Facebook. The Anfield Rap, Anfield being where they play, by Liverpool FC.
So do I need to know all the lyrics before I'm allowed into the Liverpool Stadium?
I think if you know all the lyrics, they kick you out.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
But, you know, like, when it's in the 80s, everything gets a pass, kind of. It's like, okay, it's terrible. Yeah. But when it's in modern times, like as of a couple years ago, songs just don't work, man.
No.
It just doesn't. Sports songs don't work.
No.
They don't work, okay? I have one maybe honorable mention later, but this is by our own Clint Dempsey, okay?
Ooh.
You may know him from scoring many goals for the United States soccer team. Now, Clint Dempsey believes he's a rapper also, Mike Berlo. Because he goes by the name of The Deuce.
Oh, The Deuce. Oh,
so I mean, this is called...
Nothing horrible is associated with The Deuce.
I gotta tell you, for my birthday, as a joke, I got... it's called Poopery.
Okay. I've heard about that.
Yeah. I actually emailed them today for a sponsorship.
I actually heard that works pretty good from
works
a friend.
Amazing. It's amazing. For those of you who don't know, it's a poo spray that you spray in the toilet prior to poo. Okay. So in the case of emergency, it might be a little hard. But then you poo and no smell. Wraps it all up in a nice lemon scented. Amazing product.
Sounds like an experiment.
Amazing product. So if we can
Let's get Poopery, a horse with diarrhea, and let's see what happens.
Well, if we can get Poopery as a sponsor, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I would promote you guys for free.
I want to interview that woman who used to do the commercial. She was kind of cute.
There was a Poopery commercial?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, but anyway, back to The Deuce. This is Clint Dempsey rapping. This is called Don't Tread.
You better not.
Maybe.
Is the YouTube video sponsored by Skype?
Yes. Funny, I was listening to Joe Fernandez's podcast the other day, and all you hear him is like, God damn it, Skype, motherfucker! All right, here's the deuce, I think. Okay, so it's Clint Dempsey. He's starting to juggle his soccer ball.
Ooh, okay. All right, got a good beat.
Now, the worst is, like, when you try to be badass
and
it doesn't work. So he's like,
what's up?
You going to the game tonight?
Yeah. Already, man. You know I wouldn't miss that for the world. But
yeah, I wouldn't miss that. No.
All right, then. One.
Lay some tracks down, man.
He's doing sick juggling right now. Sick moves.
He's deucing it. He's deucing it.
Uh-oh.
We were those kids.
Playing dirt fields. That's how he started a rap video. He just talked about stuff. Yeah, Scott. I walked downstairs tonight. I came to podcast. Carton Brewery in the house, y'all.
When they find out what the dreams we chased, they hate. We as a team have a phrase we say when negativity comes our way. Don't tread.
The Deuce!
Don't tread.
Took hold like the roots of a tree. Thinks I gain is sport, then why not get on me? Cause I got on my job and made the game ferocious. I was born with the drive. I got that from your coaches. Big hawk and deuce, spitting truth in the booth. Stop, drop, and roll, I brings down the roof. Got nothing to lose and everything to prove. Don't change the mood, cause we done paid our dues.
I found another thing that US soccer men suck at.
You might think we are sun rays. And that's Clint Dempsey looking in the camera with his boys. Like, this is like a real rap video. Sitting next to his lowrider.
Go Sounders. I got an Xbox.
It just does. Oh, here's a hook.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, soccer and juggling in front of a bunch of thugs in front of a lowrider, it just doesn't match. This doesn't match, man.
He slowly was doing all right with the whole, like, talking, yeah, this is real, blah, 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 blah. And then the rap starts is like, you're a white guy.
Yeah. So I got two more real quick ones.
All right.
Let's go to my very own New York Mets, who are very responsible for a couple different a couple different terrible songs.
Okay? All right.
But None worse than get mesmerized.
Ooh, it's a play on words.
Yeah, get mesmerized.
What year did that come out in?
This would be 1986.
Okay.
You know, the year of the championship and this song.
All right.
So let's
get mesmerized, get mesmerized. Get mesmerized, get mesmerized. Get mesmerized, get mesmerized.
See, this is why you didn't win in 2015. You weren't inspired by this song.
Get mesmerized.
I'm George Foster. I love this team. The Mets are better than the Red Machine. I live to play, and that's my thing. This year we're gonna win the series ring. Play together,
series ring.
Tight. A mess with us, we're dynamite. Strawman Darryl, it's all the same. Call him Barry, what's in a name?
Thank you, George, you're a classy guy with your black back. You know we sure lie.
Thank you, George, you're a classy guy with your black bat. Hooked on phonics works for me.
They got cue cards as he's rapping.
There's no
doubt.
Three strikes, you're out.
I think he was like thinking of a rhyme as they were going along. There's no doubt.
We are the Met.
Three strikes.
We
are you're out.
The Mets. We feel no pain. But me and Doc Gooden love cocaine.
Oh.
Mesmerized. I'm mesmerized. What's sad is there's like three Mets songs.
Like they did the first one and they were like, oh, damn, that was so tight. We got to do another one, man.
The dream work to make the team work. But let's wrap it up here with the Marlins, the Florida Marlins.
They need a battle cry for the 12 people that show up for their games.
Now, Mike Berlow, you're the owner of the Marlins. You want a front man to do your song. Who do you pick?
Well, I'm in the state, so I'd probably go Flo Rida. That would make sense, right?
Yeah, but none other than front man from Creed, Scott Stapp.
Oh. I was that close. Flo Rida and Creed are so close.
Now, if you go back maybe 90-something episodes, I played this, but I have to bring it back. It's called Marlins Will Soar by Scott Stapp. As if Marlins soar,
yeah.
First off. But
they kind of just jump out of water.
It doesn't get better than this. And it sounds as if
Can
it could be on the new Creed.
Take me higher.
Could be on the new Creed album.
Let's play ball, it's game day. We want strikeouts, base hits, double plays. Take the field, hear the roar of the crowd. Come.
Take the roar of the road.
Baseballs and hits and pitchers.
What do you think gets bigger attendance, Marlins games or Creed concerts?
Creed concerts. There's a lot of white trash in this country, dude. A lot. Let's throw faith in there. Ooh.
He's just naming random things that happened in a baseball game. It's not even a song.
Box and double plays.
Call to the bullpen. We're going to get here one more.
Marlins soar. So come on, Marlins soar.
Watch that little baseball go, hit by a man each a row.
Come on, Marlins, show!
Marlins currently 52 and 106.
Well, I think that wraps up our songs. Songs.
So sad. One of these days we'll have to play The Leafs Are the Best by Mike Myers.
Ah, The Leafs Are the Best. My honorable mention was Eddie Vedder does a Cubs song.
Okay. And
it's not that bad. It's kind of like folky sounding, but those were all. Which one do you think is the worst?
The worst. I don't want to just say the last one just because we just heard it, but
come on, tell me, Michael.
I guess since he's a professional,
I may do the rest of this cast in Scottsdale voice. Yeah,
you'll lose your voice in like 10 minutes, Tom.
Not with God beside me.
I guess that would be the worst on the case that he's an actual musician and he thought that was good.
It's not the worst, it's the best, and so is God.
He went Christian?
I got to say the Liverpool one just is so bad. They don't talk like us, they cannot do it. But anyway, check out the Eddie Vedder one. Bertlow, it's guest time.
Ooh.
It's guest time. You like beer.
That's good analysis.
You like beer?
Yes.
Yes. Well, we got my favorite brewer from. Well, he's the owner. He's part,
Jason Coors.
He's part owner of Carton Brewing in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. You should check it out. It's a nice small place that does a bunch of crazy beers. So, without further ado, here's Mr. Augie Carton.
Here we go.
I have a feeling this is
There we go.
This is it. Three is a charm.
Maybe. Hello.
Hey, is this Augie Carton?
It is.
Excellent. Augie,
are we with or without video?
I'm without video, but you can keep the video on. I mean, I can put video on if you'd like to see me.
I'm not a good Skyper, so I'm never sure how I'm or what I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, Skype's never really good to us either, but you know, it keeps the audio quality.
We need
quality
to hire a full-time
decent.
IT guy for the Skype thing. It seems like everybody has issues.
I know.
It's
Uh-oh.
Case in point.
All of my communications are text. So I'm fine with that. I'm like, hello. So here I am.
Yeah. Hold on.
You guys can hear me? No issue? It's a new computer. I'm not sure how it works yet.
You were breaking up a few seconds ago, but now if you start breaking up, we can always go by phone. But let's we'll start it now. But anyway, I'm Scott Brennan. This is my cohort here, Michael Berlew.
How are you doing, sir?
I am well.
So I was just saying, I'm not blowing smoke here, but Carton happens to be pretty much my favorite New Jersey craft brewery, I should say.
He's blowing carbonated bubbles. That's what he's doing.
You should try some more. There's plenty of good ones.
There's a lot, but you know, I guess I started seeing you. I think the first time I saw your guys' product was actually, I think there was a beer in, I think it was the bar that's next to the New Jersey Devils, the arena down there in Newark. I think I remember seeing Carton Tab. And I was like, oh, what's that? And I think it was like your 07XX or something like that. Oh. Or Boat Beer, one of the two of them. And that's where I started
getting it. It's in Soda. That bar serves 077. And they were almost trouble for us when we were new and trying to figure out how to handle things. Because back before the Nets left, the Nets also played there.
Yeah. Well,
so you'd have a time of year where those guys would do as many kegs as Carton could make.
Right, right. Well, leave it up to the Nets to ruin everything.
Mm-hmm.
but so when did Carton officially start?
We opened August 15th. 2011.
Okay, so about 5 years now.
Yeah, we'll be out 5 years this summer. Our fifth anniversary is on its way.
So obviously the name comes from your last name, but are you the sole owner of the business, or are you?
I am partnered with my cousin Chris. Interesting, weird. You know, we grew up in this neighborhood called the Hartshorn Woods, which is a 2.5-mile dead end with about 25 houses along it. Our dads reached two of them, and our grandfather was a third. Nice. And not many other kids were on it. So to go find other kids, we had to pedal our bikes 2.5 miles. So we ended up growing up. Chris is about 8 months older than me, and we grew up the closest of friends. And as grown-ups, we moved home to raise our own children. So now his dad and my mom live between he and me. And we're raising our kids here, but we set about this endeavor together.
Back in my day, we used to pedal for 3 hours just to see my friend, but we were happy.
It's a thing you take to heart when to meet the kids you go to school with. You ride a lot. I still ride bikes. I ride bikes quite a lot still as 45 years old, but because it was the only way to find other people when we were kids.
So where the hell did the idea of starting a brewery come from? Because, you know, I brew a lot of beer on my own, and I've done a little brewing here and there, and I worked at a homebrew shop and was able to brew at Crow's up in Sparta a few times. But, you know, like I always thought about, you know, that's like a lot of people who are into it. Like, oh, man, it'd be great to do a brewery thing one day. And, you know, where did the idea come for you guys?
Well, it's boat beer. And it's not really much fancier than boat beer. Chris did a renovation on his house, which includes putting a kegerator in. I think it was 08 or 09. And we would get sixthels for that kegerator, and we still live down the same dead end. So again, it's still a 2.5 mile bike ride if you want to see anybody. So we would, we'd get together at his place. And back then before, I mean, there's this uptick in craft awareness. But back in 09, you could get, I remember we were drinking a lot of Hibernator. We could get Dogfish 60 sixthels. Right. We could get Nugget sixthels when they were out. We had one good liquor store that had a good relationship with a distributor, and they just would get a sixthel of everything. All stuff, by the time Carton opened, we couldn't get a 60 sixthel for the house anymore. I don't think anybody gets Nugget.
Right.
But in the beginning, we were drinking these beers and we were loving them. And we really liked big, hoppy, double IPAs. Flower Power.
Yes.
You know them. 09 Flower Power was maybe one of the greatest beers ever, and why there's a Carton Brewing. But we would drink them, and, you know, I'd get all in them, and I'd get really excited, and I'd smell them, and I'd taste them, and I'd smell them, and I'd taste them, and I'd walk home from Chris's house, because I couldn't even drive the 2 blocks between us. and that seemed a problem that needed solving. So we figured out a recipe. I used to brew with my original brewer, our head brewer when we opened, Jesse Ferguson, who's starting a brewery called Interboro in Brooklyn now.
Nice.
He's my wife's best friend's husband. So Jesse and I were always hanging out and always talking, and I'd given him a gift as a homebrew kit as a thank you gift for helping out at our wedding. So he was brewing, and I talked to him about brewing, and I'd read books, and basically I set about the task of solving the problem of wanting all the aromatics and all the bitterness and all the kind of dynamic evolution of palate of a big overhopped 8 to 9% double. But I set the Coors Light ABV of 4.2 as the target, because growing up in New Jersey drinking like that, I knew, you know, I can drink 4.2 beer all day and live without an issue.
And make it back to 2.5 miles.
Yeah. It's no, you know what I mean? You learn the pacing of those. That's what you're taught when you're a 17-year-old in New Jersey high schools and the you know, the Drunks Against Mad Mothers or whatever they're called come in and teach you your limits. That's the context they're teaching you, right? I'm a 200-pound, 6'2 guy. I can have two of those in an hour, and then if I slow down to one an hour after that.
I think you mean the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, not the Drunks Against Mad Mothers.
I think he had a few of those hoppy drinks before this interview.
Whatever they are, they're a terrible group of people demonizing things that don't need to be demonized. But you know what I mean? So they teach you that math, and you learn those things, and you know those rhythms, and you can deal well within those rhythms.
Right.
So that was what I was looking for, right? Because when at the time when you had fresh Flower Power, or Nugget, especially Nugget, you know what I mean? Any of those, or 60, you'd fill the pint, and I love the way it smelled and tasted, and I'd drink it down. I like drinking, so I would drink it, and there was just no way past, you know, if you got two in an hour and a half, you were, that was the end of your true mobility for the night.
Right, right.
A cab. So we set about, we designed boat. People nowadays, see, you got to remember 5 years ago, there was no such thing as a session IPA. Mm-hmm. So that's not what we were thinking of, right? We weren't trying to make a smaller version of an IPA. We were trying to make a beer fun to drink if you drank doubles.
Okay.
So boat, I still don't call boat a session IPA. People do. I get it. That's the niche it definitely fits in. But boat's a session beer for double drinkers. It's way too pale to be an IPA. It's way too bitter to be anything other than a double.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know what I mean. It's too low ABV to be a real IPA. It's all these things that make it not that. But it's got bitterness. It's got bitterness from the yeast we leave in suspension by not filtering it. It's got 60-minute, 20-minute, 10-minute knockout, 2 dry hops.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all these things that, like I said, make it way overly bitter for a session IPA, but make it perfectly bitter for a guy who wants to drink 6 of those instead of something much bigger.
Right. So
once you have that, you know, keep in mind what you're talking about are 2 market participants, guys with a good enough relationship with the local liquor store to get special kegs every Friday night. And we saw that as something that we would want to buy. So we set about building a brewery to do that. And then, so that's Carton, right? Carton will always make boat. As long as I always have a 6-liter of boat in my house and cans everywhere else I drink, Carton's doing its job. And then all the rest of it is just playing, using it as a creative outlet to just fool around with flavors I want to create.
So the recipe you initially came up for boat, how much has that changed to now? A whole bunch of times, or?
No, it's very funny. The actual recipe, with some small exceptions, was the version 2 we brewed when we were homebrewing. We couldn't believe that was enough, though. So by the time we finally left boat alone and stopped trying to make it better, we had done 24 variations on a pilot batch on our homebrew system, our 10-gallon homebrew system. And every time we just ended up back at number 2. So it really is number 2. But those 24, that effort of 24 made boat a much more dynamic beer because, you know, the hop crisis that's making a lot of people nuts right now was kind of foreshadowed. We saw that coming in 2010. So we were doing things like, you know, it's a Cascade heavy, Citron Amarillo heavy kind of hop bill. And we started playing with things like Galaxy as a possible citrus substitute. We figured that it didn't work, but we liked the wrinkle it gave to boat. And we started playing around with all the other sea hops except Chinook, right? So all those, and we used Nugget to bitter because we love Nugget, and that had to be somewhere. And by the time we're done, it's got 9 total hops from 60 down, all with varying cohumulone and alpha levels. So as the hop harvest come in and those things move, we can adjust across a much broader right. spectrum. And as things get harder to get, we can adjust, right? You can take 10% of Citra out of the bill and up Galaxy 10,
right?
And it doesn't move the flavor of boat significantly at all. And therefore, things that have been torturing other brewers, we managed to live through just by the happenstance of trying to make other versions of boat back in 2010.
How hard is it to find different hops for your brew to get the freshness and your variety to kind of figure out your recipe?
I don't know why other people have so much trouble with it and we don't. I think we're small. I know we contract very heavily.
Right.
And, you know, I'd say, what have we made? We've made 60, 70 beers in the 5 years.
Really? That high, huh?
Yeah, I'd say only 20, 25 of those are truly hoppy beers. And a lot of those are one-offs. And we're so small. Like, the amount of hops we need to do a beer like Epitome are literally, you know, in the hop room at even a place like Weyerbacher, which is a tiny little brewery near us, the amount of hops we need to make a beer on the floor at Weyerbacher.
Right, right.
So I just think we're lucky. We've got good relationships with hop people, and they sent us a lot of experimentational hops, and they're very good at playing with us so that I have new flavors to play with. And we have all kinds of weird little projects. Like, we make an ESB with an experimental hop called HBC, I think it's 363, that we make only for cask, largely only for our own tasting room.
Right.
But somebody gave me that hop. It smelled like Earl Grey tea to me. And I went and wrote an ESB recipe with that in it, and then some bergamot. That's a fun beer we love to make. We make it, you know, it's always around in the tasting room, but it's just because that hop smelled like tea and that was a fun one. And that starts because a hop guy gave me a hop guy. But I think all year, all that we make, you know, we make 20 gallons at a time on our tippy once a month.
Now, for listeners, tell them what the tippy is.
Oh, the tippy's, it's a homebrew system. It's basically where I do the R&D. I still have my day job. I go to work every morning.
Really?
So kind of the way I run what carton's going to be as far as the beers go is I brew 20 gallons every Sunday with my brewers. We work out what the recipe is going to be. Once we decide what it is, they brew it Monday through Friday on the big system.
Right. So, you know, like 2010, you know, like I know laws have lightened a little bit in New Jersey, but, you know, I used to read all about like all sorts of nightmares on opening a brewery, just getting paperwork in action and getting the ball rolling. How was your experience getting the brewery open?
So my partner Chris is a lawyer, and a very good one, world class lawyer. And when I was interviewed by the federal, whoever gives you the license at the federal level, I think we call it an ABC in New Jersey. It may be TTB at the federal level. But part of that is you have a phone interview, and the lady that interviewed me on the phone to make sure I wasn't whatever you can't be and brew beer, actually said to me, she's like, you know, too much of the information that's in an application is personal, so I couldn't redact this and hand it out, but I would like to hand out your application to all application people because of how perfect it is.
That's advantage of having a lawyer on hand.
You know, it's everybody has their skill set, and like I said, he's not just a lawyer, he's a very good one.
So that
was him doing his job. That, you know, that's his role. It's one of his roles at the brewery, but he did it so perfectly. If you ask me, opening a brewery is painless. I suspect if you ask Chris, it's not.
So what was the timeline from concept to opening? How long was that?
Oh, I don't know. I think I said to Chris, I want to open a brewery. Let's figure out how we're going to do that. Probably in 2009. I think we started taking it very seriously in 2010. I convinced Jesse to quit his job and come on board with us. And we were kind of paying him to work at other breweries to figure out how we were going to brew. So we parked him at Kelso in Brooklyn, and we parked him at who makes Wake and Bake? Terrapin.
Terrapin, yep.
Parked at Terrapin for a couple weeks, and he stayed at 16 Mile for a week, and, you know.
Nice.
Just a whole bunch of different breweries so he could learn how to actually brew on a big system. And then pulled him out of that for 3 months of building, and then we sold our first beer August 15th. So I'd say all it was a year and a half, 2 years.
Oh, it's not too bad. I hear other nightmares than that.
Yeah, this guy's got the setup, man. He's got the beer lawyer. He's got spies going in, figuring out what to do. Got a little mafia going on there, crap brewery.
You'd be surprised. It's not really spies. Everybody's welcoming. And when you say to a guy, look, I'll pay him. You don't have to pay him. He'll wash all your kegs. Just please teach him how to brew on a big system. Not many people say no to that.
It's funny you said that. I was thinking today, like, you know, I got the experience to brew, like I told you, at Crow's up in Sparta. And, you know, like the most I had done was, like you said, maybe like a 10-15 gallon batch. And, you know, like the brewing is the fun part, but the cleanup and the sanitizing and everything, no one realized how much that took. And then I finally did like what I think it was like a 75-gallon or 100-gallon batch. And, you know, it's a lot of backbreaking work that people don't realize. You know, the brewing is only a small part of it. Like, are you present on the big brew days, or are you more of the development kind of part of it?
Once the recipe is written, my staff can run that. They definitely, I mean, if they ever need help or if somebody's sick, go carry stuff around and, you know, grain out and do stuff like that. But the nice part about Carton, one of the many benefits we have from, you know, Chris and I made a very big decision to keep our jobs to do this, which means neither one of us have ever taken any money out of Carton, which means Carton has what would be considered by many a very big staff.
Okay.
For such a small brewery. But I have 4 full-time brewers, and I'm transitioning the woman that's been managing my tasting room for the last 2 years into brewing. So she's now a brewer 3 days a week and tasting 2 days a week. So for a 15-barrel system producing 3,000 barrels a year, we have 4.5 full-time brewers. And they're all great. Like, they do that. That's their job. So, like, tonight, I got off the boat at 6:30, stopped at the brewery, tasted a beer that's in the fermenter that needs to go to the break Friday, gave my notes on what I'd like to see done to it, and they'll do that tomorrow. So, you know what I mean? Like, That part, I've got some real professionals running. That's their job. And at this point, I feel like I'd be getting in their way if I showed up and said, no, it's my brewery. I'm going to brew today. Step back.
Yak milk. That's what's going to work this time. I know it.
We've tried it.
So when you started the brewery, were you pretty content with just starting with the stuff that you knew, or were you like really into let's try to experiment some stuff? What was your game plan when it started?
Well, the thing is, there is nothing we know.
That's our motto around here.
We try not to make. If it's been made, we see no reason to make it. I guess the best anecdote I have that illustrates that is back in 2010, while we were doing all this, maybe even 2009, I took my wife and 2 young sons to Chicago to visit my best friend. I don't know how familiar you are with Chicago, but they've got a couple great museum aquarium things in a complex called The Shed.
Okay.
I'm aware of that.
We'd been wandering around Shed with the boys, and the museum, I think it's called the Field Museum or something like that, but the museum had a roving chocolate, you know, the history of chocolate or chocolate in history kind of thing. Uh-huh. So we go through, and it's not any of it was stuff I didn't know as a foodie, but it was organized in a very fascinating way. And obviously, there's no way to talk about chocolate without talking about the Aztec chocolate drinks. And at the end, they had some gourmet chocolatier who I think had sponsored the whole thing selling their chocolates. And they had a very dark cacao with a sip of vanilla and chili chocolate. And I drank it, and I was like, holy shit, I've got the best idea. So I literally walk out of the museum, I call up Jesse, and I talk him through a recipe I want to do. Like, listen, it's going to be a big, really rich, overcooked stout. And we're going to put vanilla, and we're going to put a ton of chili peppers in there. It's going to be absurd. And we're going to put some cinnamon, and we're going to put some cacao. And he goes, oh, Hunapu. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, Cigar City makes that beer. It's called Hunapu. So I said, are you kidding me? He's like, no. I was like, all right, get a bottle. So he managed to trade, or somebody got us a bottle. And I got home from that trip 5 days later, had my first sip of Hanapu and said, all right, well, throw that recipe out. That beer's been made, and that beer's been made perfectly by Wayne. And every time I see Wayne, I say, yeah, Wayne, you stole my beer idea. And then he did it again later with A Line Goes, which was actually, didn't even steal that one from me. I never had it. I just wish I had. But so that's not our thing, right? If it's made, we don't necessarily make it. We make what we want to drink. So we do have a double IPA, which is a thing everybody makes, but that's what we want to drink. If you have O-Dub, I think I could make the argument that O-Dub is very different than everybody else's double IPA. Mm-hmm. More for its attempt to balance and not just be a smoke show at the end of Boyle. But other than that, we're really looking to do what's not being done. Now, having just made this romantic thing out of not doing what's being done, most recently the challenge I've been working on with the brewers is an 8% imperial stout that's just made out of the four ingredients.
Right.
Because I'm finding it hard to find that these days.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Like, so
our motto off the beaten craft used to be, let's see what we can put in beer. And now everybody's putting everything in beer. So we're going, well, the things we can't find in our local store are, we just made a dry hop session lager and we're about to make a regular IPA. And we're about to release a Russian Imperial Stout dry hopped with astronaut ice cream. So it's not that I'm not still fucking around with that.
With astronaut ice cream.
Yeah.
That is awesome. When does that come out? I need to write that down.
A couple weeks. You'll see it. It'll come out. You'll know when it happens.
What's the name of that?
Cosmonaut. It's a Russian astronaut.
Oh.
Beautiful. So, it's funny you're saying, every brewery seems to have like a different identity. And you guys, early on, for what I liked about you guys was exactly what you just explained. The way you experimented, where you came up. Early on, that's why I really got into Dogfish Head early on, was just the amount of experiment and whatnot. And you seem to keep releasing something that's still different. And, like, you nailed it on the head. Like, it's hard almost. Nowadays, you think you see everything, and then you go, oh, okay, this is new, and this is new. And some work, and some definitely don't. But how do you go through? You have a lot of bad batches that you never release, or do you release everything? Or what's the experiment part of it like?
The tippy helps a lot with that, right? Because I know that at the homebrew level, this is going to sound crazy, but it's really nothing to dump 20 gallons of beer.
Right.
And we'll do that 50 times. It's funny. We make beers. Like, I make beers. There's some beers. We have a beer out right now called Swisher. Do you know Swisher?
Yeah, the grape Swisher.
So we do Swisher once a year. We've done a cherry. We've done an orange. Grape is the one this year. We'll do peach or vanilla next year. Mm-hmm. But the joke was a different way to approach smoked beers. So what we did was, basically, I think if you were going to categorize it, it's an smoked Cascadian fruited beer is what I think you'd have to call it. But it's everything that can piss a person off in beer. It's way over hopped. If you're not a hoppy IPA guy, it's going to piss you off. It's smoked, which I think, 80% of beer drinkers don't like smoked beers. And then we've put grapes in it. So it's going to piss off anybody that doesn't want fruit in their beer. So we start off with a beer that is just obviously going to upset people. And we don't try to make it non-upsetting, right? There's so many people that see Grape Swisher, don't try to comprehend what the beer is supposed to be, sip and go, I don't taste grape. And the thing is, you're not supposed to taste grape. It's supposed to finish on a grape kind of perfume level awareness as a grape cigar would. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's supposed to be grape mixed into tobacco and the smell of weed. The whole idea is, we've taken hops that smell like weed, put them in a kind of rich tobacco-y porter with a smoked aspect to it, and then put fruit in it. So it should smell like weed, taste like a cigar, and finish on grapes. But like I said, each of those components, you're alienating a large portion of regular beer drinkers, and you're alienating even the geekiest ones. But what you find are very experimental flavor people, right? The same guys who you know, it's funny. I did a show with Garrett Oliver on Monday, and Garrett very funnily quoted some old kind of borscht belt comedian saying, you know what acquired taste means? Acquired taste means it tastes bad. You know what you don't have to acquire a taste for? Things that taste good. And what I challenged that was, you know, everybody's a different level of diner. Everybody's a different level of drinker. But at some point, as you mature, you're attracted to things that are more bitter, right? Some point you move from iceberg lettuce to kale. Some, you know what I mean? Or endive or something where you want more bitter. And that's just a growing, mature human palate.
Right.
Well, people that take that to a level where they're just looking for absurdity, those people love the weird little ones. So to talk about what you're saying, I'll put out a beer I know is going to piss off half the people that drink it, hoping it's going to excite another portion more than any other beer ever has, because they've never seen a beer willing to push out that far. But then there's other beers we make. Like, we make a pale, we make a brown, we make a session milk stout. There's beers for everybody. I'd say I'm moving around. Sometimes I'm fucking around with flavor. Sometimes I'm fucking around with idea. And sometimes I just feel like drinking beers. And that's usually when I'm making a hoppy pale, like Hop Pun or Epitome or any of those. And as long as I cover them around, I think I'm doing my job right. If you love one of every five, you're happy with three of every five, and one really confounds you and you can't figure out what the fuck I was thinking.
Do you have like one recipe like that was just a complete nightmare, complete failure, like something that you're like, oh Jesus Christ, this was terrible?
Yes,
but
it was
a grape swifter.
Yeah, yes, but it was on purpose. It's very funny. There's one beer I refer to lovingly as Carton Abortion.
I'm sure that was a great
show. So have you ever had our winter warmer called Decoy?
Yes.
Okay. So Decoy, you may or may not know, is modeled loosely on my idea that if I made so in your brain, start with a Belgian quad. Change the yeast to Chico, because what I want from the Belgian quad is the figginess, but none of the banana or clove.
Okay.
So we did a cold Chico ferment so that it would behave on a Belgian quad malt bill so that we'd get all the figginess of a Belgian quad with that. And then what I did was, basically dry hop it, but spice it with Sichuan red peppercorns, cumin, coriander, lavender, and wild honey.
Jesus.
Because that's the five spice rub that a chef puts on a duck that he served with figs. Okay. So that's the concept. The chef is Daniel Hume, who runs America's number one restaurant, according to all the lists that count in New York City. So I called up Daniel. I'm lucky enough to be a guy who could call up Daniel. And I called up Daniel and said, I need your spice rub recipe. I'm making a beer based on it. And his spice rub is something like two parts cumin, two parts coriander, one part lavender, one part Sichuan peppercorns, and one part honey. Now, if you've ever fooled around with spices and beers, which I imagine you have as a home brewer, you know that that is going to be a terrible beer.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't sound good.
The lavender is going to be soapy.
Yep.
The cumin and coriander is just going to be, you know, the spice world spices. But what I said was, look, let's just make it with that, knowing it's going to fail, and then we can figure out where we need to dive, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So let's make that the control. The final recipe is something like 50 parts Sichuan red peppercorn to 25 parts lavender to one part cumin to one part coriander.
Right.
Wow. And I think it's perfect. They're all in there and they lay right on the figs and it does everything it's supposed to do. But that first one tastes like, do you remember before, how old are you guys? Are you old enough to remember cabs before cab hygiene was important?
No idea.
No.
Yeah, well, you
I'm
used
probably
to get
old
cab,
enough, but
They used to get New York City cabs, and a lot of them smelled just like that beer.
Okay. For a second, I'm there like, what is cab hygiene? Like some kind of fancy term. Now you're talking about cabs.
I'm going to brew a beer with cab in it.
Smell like a lot of cumin and a lot of coriander. But the problem was my brewer at the time, Jesse, was a home brewer. So since there was nothing wrong with the beer, you know what I mean? There was no diacetyl. There was no, DMS. It was a well-executed beer. It just happened to taste freaking terrible. He kept sharing it with people, trying to get them excited, and that kept making me upset. I just kept meeting new people that had tasted the beer. So that's how and why I had to abort that keg. So what I did was go down to a local bar that is sadly no longer because of Sandy, but it was called the Twin Light Tap House, and it was a great place. And I gave the Sixtel to the chef as a gift with which to make a mole.
Okay.
So he put it in a pot and boiled it down to about 1/20th its original density. And for about a month, you could go to the Twin Light Tap House and have tacos made with a mole made out of the first horrible attempt at deep.
There you go.
Wow.
So what is the – right now, like, we're coming to the end here, but what's on the future for Carton? What's going on now? You guys – you know, I see you popping up. I see you canning a lot of different things. I see – you know, a lot of people getting excited about different things, whether it's your regular coffee or the Irish coffee. And so what's going on now and what's in the future? What should we look forward to?
Swisher's the current one, February Swisher. Like I said, we're going to do Ricky again soon. We're going to do Monkey Chase the Weasel again soon. Cosmonaut's coming. We're trying to grow the brewery. We have the good problem of the fact that we, our 5-year business plan, I told at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about Chris and I hammering out the business plan. Our original 5-year business plan was that we would grow from 3 30-barrel fermenters. We would add 3 45-barrel fermenters, and that would be, that would be a good level of growth in 5 years. And we bought those 45s in month, they were delivered month 8.
That's good.
And we've been at capacity and not able to keep up and upsetting a lot of our neighbors. Like, sadly, part of my business philosophy is that if you try to treat your beer like it's Black Friday to get motion behind it, that motion stops, right? If you have a giant peak, especially in New Jersey, where not enough of us really care to be excited by things, that's going to hurt you. So we very much work to keep things available and make it easy. So when we started canning, we picked 30 places spread as far around Jersey as we could and gave them some cans so that guys from Cape May or Sparta or the Oranges wouldn't have to drive to the brewery to get beers. Sadly, that was a mistake because we need all the beer at the brewery. We run out every week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to break that deal with our customers and those stores. But now I've got a whole group of stores out there that think they're special, that think they should have beer, that are pissed at us because other stores do and they don't. So for us, the big catch up is to figure out this expansion we've been trying to do that's been made a little difficult by just the terrain of Atlantic Highlands. We got to get that sorted, and we've got to make more beer, and we'll probably never deal with the accounts that are acting like jerks, but there are other accounts that aren't acting like jerks I very much like to do business with. So for us, it's really sorting out that growth and getting Boat No Dub available to Jersey people so that it's not a hassle, right? So if Boat works perfectly, going back to Boat, because Carton's all about Boat. If Boat works perfectly, when you're thirsty for a Boat beer, you can just grab it. And it didn't cost you a ton of money. It's still a $10 four-pack, which, is another bad business decision I make. and if it works and you like Boat, like I said, Boat's not for everybody, but some people get it. So if they want it, It's in their fridge. They got it from their store. They didn't drive an hour to me to get it. They can just grab it, open it, and drink it, because that's what session beers are supposed to be. And once I've solved that problem, then I'll worry about all the other stuff.
Now, I listened to a YouTube video where you were talking about how you feel beer is cuisine and how you were a former food blogger. For the future, are you looking more towards making a beer that pairs well with the food, or are you looking at kind of like what you talked about with that duck, where you taste a food profile and say, I want to bring that to a beer?
They go both ways. We have a beer called BDG. You may or may not know it. That's a beer simply designed for eating. That's all it's meant to do, is just be put next to your dinner. It's a Wednesday night. You don't know what you're going to eat. You don't want to have to think about whether a beer will be good with it or not. BDG is meant to be that beer, just a good, hearty beer that tastes like beer that will go with most any food. And then we've already talked about Decoy, but I have a green apple wasabi sour that's a deconstruction of another chef's sorbet. And I have a saison we did with chili and saffron. That's a decomposition of an Australian chef's prawn dish. I go both ways. It's you know, when I get a flavor that I think has components would be interesting in a beer, I'll go that way. And one of the things I'd like to do when we have this expansion is I really wish I could be making a full-time saison. I only have six tanks. There's only so many beers.
Now, real quick. Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
I'm here. Oh. You're breaking up a bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Sounds good.
Oh, all right. So real quick, do you still love it as much as you did when you brewed on a, you know, with you and your cousin, you said, like back in the day? Do you still love it for the craft of it, or when it becomes a business, does your love of it change a little bit?
Oh, if I've made anything clear while we've been talking to you that this is not a business to me, I'm a terrible businessman. If you ask anybody that has to deal with me, I think the most frustrating thing about me is I don't give a shit about the business.
We don't give a shit about the business.
Like I said, we're 5 years old and the company has yet to pay me a penny.
Nice.
But for me, it's the best parts are those eureka moments. One, where I have the idea, and then two, when I believe I've accomplished the mission, right? So I don't know, right now, fun one we're working on is a cherry blossom goes.
Nice.
Cherry blossoms are a thing that bloom in spring, mm-hmm. and Japanese kiseki cuisine uses very nicely, and it's a flavor I adore for being one of the most subtle flavors in the world. So it's completely the anti-American craft beer at the moment flavor, because it's purely an aromatic and purely ephemeral, and everybody's going to read the word cherry and they're going to taste it and they're going to yell at me that it doesn't fucking taste anything like a Jolly Rancher. And I'll explain what a cherry blossom is. But so cherry blossoms come and go in 3 days in April. You know what I mean? That's how fast they happen.
No, I used to have one in front of my house.
But what the Japanese chefs do is they salt and pickle them to keep them around largely for teas and for sorbets and chewy gummy desserts throughout the rest of the year, which obviously pushed me in the direction of a goza, right? Because it's salted already, right? It's a salted thing.
Right.
So, you know, I said about that. That was one of the things. I wanted to put some sake rice into the malt bill to kind of lighten it up and make it even prettier and beat that Japanese inspiration drum a little harder. And I approved a recipe two Wednesdays ago.
Awesome.
So when that idea came to me, I was like, this is a great idea. It'll be perfect. It'll be a real light, real easy summer drinking goza. It'll have cherry. It'll bring cherry blossoms to it in an appropriate way without having to make it too heavy handed and dopey. And then we started brewing it. We brewed it about eight times. We were tweaking, and we found different ways to get cherry blossoms and learned a lot about the movement of the price late in the season. So like I said, they come in April, right? So that's when they're cheapest. We finished that recipe in February, which is when they're most expensive. We learned that lesson. And I love that recipe, but again, now the fun of it, the you know, trying to be the excited, the creative part of it. So I'm not done with that. The recipe's written, the brewers know what they're doing and when they're doing it, and now I get to go think of a new beer.
Yes.
And that's what I'm working on.
That's great. So real quick before we go, Augie, if people want to check out Carton Brewing or get information on Carton or say hi, you know, you responded to me within a couple hours, I think, when I contacted you. Where can they go?
That's thank you. I'm terrible. Like I said, bad at business. I never do that shit. We have a website, which is www.cartonbrewing.com, which kind of amalgamates everything. I would say Facebook is where we're best at communicating. We're kind of one way with Twitter. We just use it as a way to disseminate information, hoping that's easier for some people. We have a cool Instagram one of my brewers runs. These are all Carton Brewing, by the way.
Okay.
And if you want to know what we're up to, I think Facebook's probably the most easy give and take. But, you know, if you've ever emailed me, you know I respond. And you know, we have a Square page. You can buy T-shirts from that, I guess. I think we do. I think if you just Google Carton Brewing, you'll be okay.
Augie, thank you so much for coming on, and we'd love to have you on in the future again, maybe when you got something else coming on.
Yeah, reach out, guys. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And this should be up on Monday, so I'll send you the link and whatnot.
Yeah, just shoot me a link.
Sounds great.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Great talking to you, man.
Mike Berlo, we're back. Woo. We're back, and that was Mr. Augie Carton. Made me want to drink.
Yeah, very fascinating. You say the same thing when you see me.
Yeah, and any guest, I'm like, made me want to drink. Hippo attacks about, yeah.
Yeah. I know the drivers of mother will get very mad at me. Those dandies.
Drunks against mad mothers.
That
might have to be a name of this episode. Drunks against mad mothers in Scotland. Scott Stapp.
Oh, yeah.
Scott Rylan's dead.
Oh, now I got really.
Well, so is Scott Stapp's career, but.
I don't know. Once that video comes out with the Marlins, that kind of crowd base.
You know, Scott Stapp was actually like a huge like drug addict, and he had like bipolar, like really bad bipolar and schizophrenia and stuff like that. And he went on like weeks like where his family couldn't find him, and he was calling like the FBI and thinking the government was after him and stuff like that. Yeah. Wild.
Sounds like Johnny Manziel.
Scott Stapp. But
Johnny Manziel, if you're out there, well, we'd love to podcast with you.
Yes, Johnny Manziel or Poopery or Sean Kemp. Our standards are high here.
Yes, exactly. If you're a fucking nut, come on to Verbal Shenanigans.
Berlo, I've been thinking a lot about like a lot of things going on in my life. I felt like I put on a few pounds. I've been thinking about like dieting a little bit, just getting that couple 6-7 pounds off me, and it's been going well. I've been doing like a lot of us actually got from Joe Rogan. His podcast, he was talking about a certain diet, but a lot of like no sugar, no bread and stuff. It's kind of like the paleo diet, but not as it's actually deals with fats like avocados and things that have natural fats in them.
Okay.
But anyway, that's not where I was getting it. So it's kind of working. I mean, it kind of sucks, but I'm sure these three beers I just drank.
I'm sure that helped out.
Yeah.
Think it was made in Mexico where the avocados grow. So.
Been thinking a lot about like my mortality, you know, I want to be healthy and live to see a lot of days, and you know how, you know, think about like death in itself. You know, we always think of death, but what do you want done with your body when you're gone?
Me, I'm starting to think about just getting cremated, throw me somewhere, and forget about me.
Like Frank from Always Sunny, just put me in the trash. I don't care. Put things inside me.
I mean, the old school ways was just, oh, you got to buy your plot, and everybody would come to your tombstone, blah, blah, blah.
I'd come to your tombstone, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aw. That'd be purgatory, just covered in Scott's piss and shit.
He'll like this.
Damn, this afterlife really does suck.
Welcome to episode 3012. Me and Berlo here. Mm. He's not really here, but
I'm pissing.
I'm shitting on his grave again.
You know, podcasting has been going for like 15 years now, but I'm not going to give it up. Just as long as I can shit on my buddy, I'm good.
Weird, we got the same amount of listeners as we did 70 years ago.
There's now 18 billion people on the planet. We still couldn't get 100.
But, yeah, I've been thinking about, I don't know if I like, cremating seems cool. I don't know if I like the whole idea of this awesome body I have just being burned to ashes. That kind of sucks. But then
you'd
the other option,
have the worms eat you.
Then I was thinking that, like, I'd be shoved in a box, an expensive box.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like,
I mean, my whole thing is I don't want the whole ordeal where people got to carry me into the ground and put me in there and all that fun stuff, and have to worry about like gray blankets and flowers.
I want to be like,
I wanted it to be a party.
I want the Viking burial, personally. Where they put you on a ship and then light the ship on fire.
Yeah. I'm not sure how the cops will react to that.
Who cares? I'm dead. What are they going to arrest me?
You got life in prison.
The Shenanigans Showdown, 2070. Give me a Viking burial ready.
Burley, not dead yet. Damn it, I need the 50 points. I lost the last 5 years.
But then there's been, there's the... There's not that many options to do with your body. Like, mm-hmm. it's like get shelved in the ground, get burnt, maybe get cryogenically frozen. That might be kind of cool.
Ooh.
No, cryogenics.
Yeah, you can spend your life with your head decapitated next to Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Ted Williams, too, right? His head or something like
that? Yeah, his son fought for him to be frozen, and then he died.
I'll tell you how I want to go. Okay, have you heard of these organic burial pods?
No, I haven't.
They're these big pods, okay? And they stuff you into the pod, and they fill... You're basically like a giant seed.
Ooh.
You're wrapped in dirt and seed and stuff like that. So eventually, it's a biodegradable pod. Eventually, you become a tree.
Oh. I don't know if I want to be a tree for the rest of eternity, though.
As opposed to what? Worm food?
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, what if there's reincarnation and you're just that tree sitting there for like 100 some odd years?
But I think, like they said, the image would be like, instead of like a cemetery, right? It would be just all these planted trees would grow, and it'd be like a memorial park.
I hear you. I mean,
my kids can come visit my tree and climb on me.
Some douchey teenager carves a heart into you.
Some fucking hipster chains themselves to me, not to knock me down. But think about it. Even if I do get knocked down, I could be made into like a useful product.
Mm.
Like, think about this. Okay.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm hearing you.
So, let's say you have a house. Okay.
Okay.
You have children. You die. You become a tree. Your great grandchildren chop you down, make you into their house.
Hmm.
I'm living in grandpa.
I know some grandpas that would wish for that, but they're not wood yet.
They get wood, but what about that? What about that? You could become like a memory forest.
I mean, I guess as long as I don't end up being like an IKEA bookcase, I guess that's fine.
You're some thing that some dad gets angry and puts his fist through. I don't care where they wanted the 3/4-inch screws.
I got 4 nuts here. Why? Where did they go?
You put it together and it just falls. You're
all
in
the
dumpster. You're in a dumpster by 3 months. It's in your will. Plant me. Just please don't sell me to IKEA.
Fuck, why'd you plant me in Sweden? Damn it.
So that'd be a way I'm okay with. But what about like if you were buried, what would you wear? I don't want to do the suit. I want a suit.
No, I would probably do one of my sports teams. Just if I got to go eternity, spend eternity as the Phillies lose forever.
A Phillies jersey?
It would either be Redskins or Phillies. Lord knows they ain't going to be Sixers or Flyers.
Sixers? I feel like they've buried those
jerseys. The entire
jerseys
team gets buried with me every night.
I'm thinking I'd be buried. I want to be buried in something crazy, like I don't know.
We should dress you up like clown shoes.
Maybe like buried in like a Viking uniform or like a superhero outfit.
You're obsessed with Vikings.
Or like, people come to my funeral, they're laughing. You know, like, oh my god, they dressed him up like a or like a marionette, like a marionette costume.
Hi, everybody! As you read your will, some guy's on top of the chapel, just moving your arms and legs.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want a normal wake. How about a roast? That would be cool. Like, all my friends come roast the shit out of me. Like, my body, they prop it up on a chair.
And then we'll cremate you, so we roast you twice.
Yeah, roast me up. But I think that's how I would go. But I looked up a couple different things here. A couple things.
I got something here, too, when you wanted.
Okay. But these are some bizarre death rituals from around the world. So there's a couple different things, like in New Guinea, you could be eaten. Okay, they call it endo-cannibalism, where they have celebrations where they eat the dead.
I don't know. I don't think my meat would be that tasty, to be honest.
Oh, me neither. Your meat would be terrible.
Yeah.
You look like you would be a very poor-tasting human being.
Maybe that's how I'll go, just to force it. Go on, Scott. Have some Burloo.
It says it here, I want Scott to eat me. Mm-hmm. Challenge one, bitch. you would not be a tasty dude.
Probably not. Kind of chewy.
I don't think I'd be very good either.
No.
You could in Tibet, you could have a Celestian burial, which means you basically. Let's see.
They bury me like Star Wars.
They practice ritual dissection or sky burials, the tradition of chopping up the dead into small pieces and giving the remains to animals, particularly birds. So you're like feeding an ecosystem. Your life is going on.
But that's just like above ground worm eating.
Yeah, Buddhists have no desire to preserve or commemorate a dead body, something that is seen as an empty vessel. So once you leave, your body's just a
my soul is gone. This is just the shit I left behind.
Yeah,
it's a luggage.
Suspended burial. This is kind of cool.
Okay,
you're basically the mysterious Bo people of Hemp Pond Valley in China. They basically make these wooden caskets that are like 300 feet in the air in rocks, like on the rock walls and cliff sides.
So like. People who are like cliff diving and like climbing mountains are just going over my dead body.
Yep.
That'd be kind of cool. Like, I could be in the reboot of Cliffhanger.
There is, the Viking funeral, which you talked about. This one's weird. Ritual finger amputation.
Okay.
As if the death of a loved one wasn't traumatic enough, the Dani people of Papua New Guinea cut off their own fingers.
Okay.
The practice was done to both gratify and drive away spirits while also providing a way to use physical pain as an expression of sorrow and suffering. So that would mean you die and I gotta lop off a thumb.
Oh, that's. I'm definitely for that. I mean. Damn, I got such a large family. I'm down to like two pinkies.
In Madagascar, they dig you back up and then they wrap you up in fresh cloth.
Don't call to come back.
In the American Northwest, the Haiti people make totem poles out of you.
Ooh. I'd be down with that.
Following that, the box would be, you'd be crushed to a pulp with clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would fit into a small wooden box. That box would be put in front of the totem pole.
That sounds totally me.
All right. The Aborigines in Australia, they place you atop a raised platform and cover with leaves and branches where you're left to decompose. In some cases, the liquid from decaying corpses is collected and rubbed over the bodies of young men to pass on the good qualities of the deceased person.
I like being rubbed on young men. I mean, that sounds like a thing I would do.
I thought you liked rubbing young men.
Well,
Hit that button over there.
This is Zoroastrian funeral. Where they have a thing with dead bodies, what they see as something that defiles everything it touches, whether it be in the ground, clothes, people, and fire. The funeral gets off to a rousing start by having a corpse cleansed in unconcentrated bull's urine. This is how I would bury you.
Thank God it's unconcentrated.
Once cleaned, the corpse is laid in linen and visited twice by Sagdid, a dog that can cast away evil spirits. After mourners visit the corpse, it is placed on top of the Dakma, which is the Tower of Silence, where Zoroastrians remove the clothes using tools. The clothes are later disposed as they've been defiled. Following this, the body is quickly devoured by vultures.
There seems to be a lot of steps here. I think a lot of people would be confused at my funeral. I don't think I didn't like that. Wait, who brought the urine? Do I feed them to the vultures now, or what? Just too confusing.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I had to choose, I think I'm going either totem pole. That's pretty cool. But, like I said, my ideal way is I want to be a biodegradable tree. I want to be a tree.
I want to be a totem pole.
My grandkids could put a swing on me, hang around me, climb me, put a tree house in me.
Aww.
Yeah, see?
That sounds adorable.
Yeah. All right, what you got?
What I got here is they just came out with a list. I like my YouTube channels here. WatchMojo.com came up with the top 10 weirdest ways to die.
Oh.
And I'm kind of wanting to see which one you would prefer here. Number 10 was death by Viagra. A man bet two women that he could have sex with them for 12 straight hours. In order to do that, he downed a bottle of Viagra, and he performed the task. Shortly after completing the task, he had a heart attack afterwards.
Okay.
Died.
Okay.
Not bad, not bad.
The worst way to go.
Number 9 was drowned by beer.
Oh, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. Basically, a beer company in the 1800s, their vats exploded, and he basically drowned a town.
A town?
A town.
That's a lot of suds.
Yeah, they basically flowed down the path to the town, and 9 people died drowned in beer.
All right. All right.
You can have your fantasy and have company with you.
Now, is there a way for me to take the Viagra and mid Viagra get drowned by beer?
Maybe that's how the bat exploded.
Because I'm in.
The next one you're probably not getting to. A woman died in her wedding dress getting too heavy in a river.
What?
basically, in a very stylish way of trying to make wedding photos, she went into the middle of a river with her wedding dress. After a few minutes of taking pictures, the dress came extremely heavy where she couldn't move out of the river. The photographer went in to try to save her, trying to do anything they can to pick her up or remove the clothing. Eventually, the river got too heavy, took a hold of her, and she drowned.
Oh, okay.
I guess that's one way to get out of a wedding.
I mean, those photos are unbearable anyway.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I might rather float down the river.
The next one, death by video games. A man in Japan played a game nonstop for 50 straight hours with no sleep, limited food and drink, and basically had a heart attack.
Oh, okay.
It was one of those strategy games, and he did not want to give up on it.
I got to get the Ocarina of Time.
I got to beat Pac-Man. That'd be the craziest if it's like the dumbest video game ever possible.
Like Donkey Kong.
Miss Pac-Man is my dream. The next one, this one I found pretty interesting. Hoarders, the Collier brothers basically came into wealth, took over their parents' very large house, and they became hoarders, basically hoarding all of their trash, stacking up piles of papers. They were so paranoid about people coming in and taking them or cleaning up their house that they created booby traps in the house to prevent people from coming after them. One of the brothers ended up going blind, and when the brother went blind, the second brother went for some food, accidentally triggered a booby trap. He got smothered in trash and eventually suffocated. The other one died.
Wait, so one of the booby trap was just dumping trash on somebody?
Yeah. They basically had a whole, like, the whole house was booby trapped. And I guess as he was walking past one area where there was a booby trap, accidentally set it off and buried him alive.
That is a very elaborate booby trap. Here, this would be my booby trap. You'd hit a room, you'd hit a door, and then like the room would turn around, and all of a sudden you hear. Just for eternity.
No! Give me a gun! Just I can't handle it!
For hours.
How do you get out of this house? The next one, bit by a headless snake. In parts of India, some of the rattlesnakes out there are incredibly toxic, but used as exotic foods. But a gentleman preparing the snake chopped off his head, little to his belief that hours after you chop these certain snakes' heads, they still keep moving. So the headless snake bit him, injected the venom, and killed him.
So how did it bite him? Like puncture the skin?
I guess the nerves are still working in some way. Like, I kind of saw the video on YouTube how you can gut these snakes and they'll still be moving around an hour after you gut them.
Oh, nice.
So basically, the head of the snake was still moving, got a hold of him, bit him, got in him. Nice knowing you.
Yeah, that's worse than being buried in trash, I think.
How about drowned in sewage?
Oh, yeah.
A woman was inspecting the sewage plant. She got the job after the previous person died in a car accident. And as she was doing her job, basically lost her balance and fell in a vat of sewage that was 15 feet deep. And she couldn't swim her way out.
Did you ever see that video of this week on Tell 'Em Steve Dave? They were talking about, I've seen the video before, but is this woman who disappeared, but they found a video of her in the elevator, like, a couple days before, like freaking out in the elevator.
I saw that.
And petting like invisible things and like.
I think I sent you that video actually when we were talking about previous subjects.
It's like a whole mystery. And then she ended up in the water tank on top of a hotel, like dead.
There was no signs of a struggle or anybody like grabbing her and throwing her in there.
Yeah. And the only way they found her in there, the people at the hotel were complaining the water was tasting bad. They were drinking her.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's how I want to be buried. I want you to put me in your drinking water. I want you to throw me in your well and drink me for weeks to come. And talking about disgusting, how about a bestiality disease?
I'm waiting for the disgusting part.
A woman over in Europe living out her dream had sex with a horse and a Rottweiler later on in the day.
When's the disgusting part come?
I'll get to it, I guess. though they could not come up with a cause for death, it's believed that she died of some kind of septic disease from having sex with a Rottweiler.
Hmm.
You're petting Obi kind of hard right over now.
That's not going to happen to us, buddy.
You don't have any diseases. We got you checked. Next one, cooked in a large pressure cooker.
Ooh.
A gentleman working for the Bumblebee Tuna Company went into one of the vats to inspect the tuna and the pressure cooker itself. Unbeknownst to him, while he was in there checking out everything, the shift changed. The gentleman coming in figured he had to start the next batch, so he closed the door.
You know what that reminds? Well, that's terrible. But remember when we went to the Kalahari Resort and they said that big tree? The guy was in there, the metal workers in there, and they were torching it while he was in there.
While he was in there. That's basically what happened to this gentleman. He cooked at 275 degrees for 2 hours.
Wow.
They looked around everywhere in the facility to try to find him until they realized they should check the vats.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of the honorable mentions that they brought up was being attacked by monkeys.
Okay.
A deputy mayor of Delhi died falling from a balcony trying to evade monkeys attacking him.
Oops.
I don't think that's the best thing to play when I say monkeys. I'm just
the Liverpool rap?
A woman who died of an overdose of vitamin A by drinking a gallon of carrot juice every day.
Oh.
Also another one of honorable mention, Unbreakable Glass. A lawyer was showing off in a office how the glass was unbreakable by running up to the glass and smashing into it. Sadly, he found a fault in there and went 24 floors down.
That's the best one.
Yeah. And the number one they listed was death by molasses. Basically, the same story of the beer. A molasses factory had a horrible explosion, which caused 200 feet waves of molasses to come down on a nearby town, which drowned about 20-some-odd people.
I feel like a molasses wave, you might have a little time to get away.
No!
They're like, here comes the molasses. Sure. Wow.
So of all those stories, Scott, which one is the most horrific and which one's the least horrific to you?
Least horrific, I might see I'm going to go with the Viagra. I mean, quick heart attack, at least he was having fun beforehand.
I wouldn't say quick heart attack after 12 hours of sex.
Well, he had a heart attack at the end of 12 hours.
Hmm.
Bam, gone.
I got a feeling he was feeling some of it and was just like, fuck it, I got to win this bet.
I'm not sure he was feeling much other than his raging heart on.
There had to have been some kind of like scrapage or whatever. He was down a couple layers of skin on that thing. That could have been as good after like hours four, maybe.
Yeah. Drowning in beer is also another one. I at least like open my mouth and try to take it down. I'm thinking most horrific. A lot of drownings in there. With a drowning in your wedding dress.
They say that's the scariest, the drowning one.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. A fire it wouldn't be fun either. Maybe, here, run me down a couple real quick.
Let's see, unbreakable glass, carrot juice, attacked by monkeys, cooked in the pressure cooker.
I'm thinking that one might be it, man.
Yeah, that's...
That's brutal.
You're just doing your job. Oh, there's this horrible tuna smell. How can this day get any worse?
Oh, and then just being...
Slam.
Pressure boiled to death. Just heat just and pressure build putting down on you and your body exploding. That's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Remember that the next time you eat a tuna sandwich, that gentleman's in there.
Well, I had one more thing, but it could take a little while. That's the only problem.
How much time we look at it?
We're pretty far. We're pretty far. But I could always record it and attach it to somewhere else if I wanted to.
Yeah, let's keep going.
All right, yeah, I'm in the mood. You know what? I don't give a shit. If the episode's long, stop listening.
Fuck you, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, you're our fans.
No, we don't care.
I was joking.
We don't care about any of them. Berlou, you would say, you mentioned you've been going out on dates lately.
Mm-hmm.
You were in a rut for a while. Now you're back out in the dating world. You're feeling good, feeling positive about yourself. So a lot of things may have changed over the years with dating.
Okay.
You think like nowadays dating's probably a whole lot different, you know? Like it's a lot more
sex for me. tons of just endless sex. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, at times I'm like, babe, calm down. She's like, no, I can't stop.
Goodbye, people. Listen to us next week.
Sorry, babe.
Internet things and texting and the whole women's rights thing. Now they have rights. You know?
Sound like an old man introducing this bit. The whole internet and these women's rights. I can't stand it.
Can't stand
it. Back in my day, you just smacked a girl that you love and she came back with you.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of what I'm getting to because I found a video from 1950 on what to do on a date.
All right. All right. I got the word out. I'm going to take some notes.
So, Berlo, I thought maybe I'd, you know, I don't want this to end for you. So maybe let's take some lessons, you know?
All right.
So this is called What to Do on a Date, 1950. Now, there's two guys walking in
the door. This is a story about what to do on a date.
Okay.
It begins one early summer afternoon. It begins with Jeff.
And
Kay.
And Kay. She's the woman.
And Nick.
Mick.
Oh, so you had threesomes back in the 50s.
Of course, you may not have a problem about what to do on a date, but Nick, well, he has a real dating problem.
Oh, no.
Mick, that faggot's got a lot of problems. He's got a club foot.
He got a running eye. It's disgusting.
Mick is a creep. So you got Mick, the other guy, and Kay. Kay is the woman right now. Okay?
All right.
If he took Kay out on a date, what would they do? Where would they go?
Yes.
Who knows? Where? Tell me!
Tell me! Help me!
So now the two guys...
Just a minute, Jeff. I'll get my tennis racket. Okay, Mick, but hurry.
Jeff and Mick. So Mick went upstairs to get his tennis racket. Now Jeff's going to suggest... Things are a little slow in the 50s.
Yeah.
Oh, he found Kay's number in a telephone book that is by their...
Hey, what about asking Kay to come to the community center with us on Friday to fix up that scavenger sale? We can make it a double date.
That doesn't sound...
That sounds dirty.
What about luring Kay to the scavenger sale?
He's twirling his handlebar mustache, I noticed.
What about luring Kay down to the scavenger sale and making her call my name, Mick?
Where's everybody else there, Jane?
Oh,
what?
We don't need anybody
else. You heard
else.
What I said.
Uh-oh.
That's no place to take a girl on a date.
You
help
idiot.
Me to fix up the scavenger sale. Is it?
Why not?
On a first date?
First.
Is it just me or a scavenger sale sounds like a slave auction or something? like a bunch of women lining up and guys are like, yeah, I'll take that one.
Date? Yeah. Well, Kay's a swell girl. I was thinking of calling her.
No,
maybe
you
ask
weren't.
Her to the show Friday. Good picture. Wagon train.
Oh, well, wagon
hurry
train.
Up and call her and let's get going. I still have to get my things yet.
I heard
call
that actor
now?
Beat out Leonardo
sure.
DiCaprio.
You know the number, don't you?
Klondike okay. 5.
He's giving her a call.
That sound is a rotary phone for our younger audience.
Hey, Kay.
What if she says no?
Hello?
Oh, hello, Kay.
God,
this
everyone from
Baxter.
The 50s had that annoying phone call. Hello? You mean, oh, and then every guy, hey, why don't you go now?
Hey, what's going on, baby?
Remember your touch? You want to go for a ride, drink some giggle water?
Oh, hello, Nick.
Now she wants me. Oh, hello, Mick.
Hello, Mick.
Why don't you come over and stuff me?
Mm-hmm.
Let's cut to Mick.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. Say, Kay, next Friday, would you like to see Wagon Train at the movies?
Kay, would you like to go see Wagon Train with me?
Costs are expensive, man. They put up the tickets to a dime a movie.
And no one wants to go out with you, Mick, you big, stuttering idiot.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick.
Aww.
I suppose you've got your mind made up to see it?
You've seen it? She's already seen it.
You well, goddamn whore, you.
Go ahead.
This guy in the scavenger.
Kay, you wouldn't want to help get the scavenger sale ready at the community center, would you?
Oh, I've been hearing about that. Yes, I'd like to very much.
Well, there's really nothing going on in the 50s. I heard about that.
That's when all the guys get together and have relations with one woman, yeah. Right? I just don't know.
I can get $2 from my body.
And then Mick's creepy friend's like, ask her about the scavenger sale, Mick. Ask her about the scavenger sale.
Buy you, girl.
What? All right. I'll call for you then. About 7? Bye. I sure didn't think she'd go to a place like that for a date.
That's where all the sluts go.
Where's my racket? Oh, ready?
You know, you better think some more, fellow, about what to do on a date.
Do you think she'll have a good time? What do you suppose I'll have to do? You know who I'll...
Oh, it's the scavenger sale.
Nick forgot to bring a condom. Nick got STDs from his swell gals.
Skip ahead.
Plenty to do, plenty of people.
Oh, here we go. Yes, this is where the narrator comes in.
Pretty good idea.
So, Berlo.
All right.
You know, you're new to a relationship. Things are going well, but you don't want to mess it up. So.
No.
You need some tips. You need some tips.
Yes, yeah. I'm listening.
Pretty good idea for a first date.
Scavenger
plenty to do, plenty of people to talk to.
So you want to go, so Berlo, you want a place, oh crap, no, you want a place where there's plenty to do.
Okay.
Lots of people.
Okay.
Okay. This is basically 1950s rape prevention.
Oh, okay.
Plenty of.
Your swell guy may just grab your vagina without your permission.
So, okay, that's first dating tip. Let me get back to that spot here. Wow, so much for keeping it on time today.
Yeah. Woo. Hour 4 of Verbal Shenanigans.
A group doing things together.
Oh,
pretty good,
yeah.
Idea for a first date.
Scavenger sales weird, man.
Plenty of people to talk to.
People were freaks in the 50s, man.
But let's see if Nick and Kay are enjoying it.
No amount of sex can make this thing look any older.
Boy, that is an old timer.
He must be 40 years old.
Come on, Mick.
Make your move.
Do it, Mick.
Uh-huh.
Can you help me put the sign up?
Oh, sure.
Can you help me put the sign up, Mick? And then take me from the rear? I don't get it. Jesus, Mick!
How's this?
That's about right.
I'll hang the elephant up. I want to see your elephant. I don't get it.
Come on, Mick!
Are you really rear, help me.
Of course I am. I'm glad you thought of coming here.
So am I. I mean...
His friend is on the ladder looking at him like, come on,
idea.
Mick.
Okay.
It's the scavenger sale.
All right.
It's the scavenger sale, Mick. This is what happened.
If you don't get pooned at the scavenger sale, I don't know when you're going to get some, kid.
He's looking at him like disapprovingly, like, come on, Mick.
It was a good idea to come here. How does Jeff get ideas like that?
Hey,
what's this?
Uh-oh.
Maybe this is where Jeff gets ideas. A list of coming activities.
Oh.
Ooh.
A bike trip.
Ooh.
That could be a lot of fun.
Biker gangs are fun.
A chance to do things with a group to get acquainted. It does look like a good time if your partner likes it.
Babe, are you into gangbangs? Just out here.
Would Kay enjoy a bike?
Only if your partner likes it.
Or a weenie roast?
A weenie roast!
Another group date. A chance to learn the give and take of working and playing together. Not much arranging needed, not much expense.
We're sitting over a fire now, roasting hot dogs.
Could be a fine date if Kay would like it.
Only
like to go to a baseball
if
game.
K would like
a
it.
A date that's not too involved.
A baseball game
through
where no Negroes are allowed.
And there are all sorts
go
of...
Go see the very white baseball league. Don't be seen by those Negroes.
Meets, for example.
Don't listen to rumors about that Jackie Robinson.
Swimming.
You can find many good ideas for dates.
Are you taking
dates
this down, Berlin?
I'm paying attention.
And dates that you don't have to worry too much about in advance. It was a good deal
coming here tonight, double dating with Jeff and Phyllis.
Oh, Jeff and Phyllis are so creepy.
When all four are good friends and enjoy the same things, double dates can be lots of fun.
Ooh.
Or you can ask Kay to go on dates with you alone. If you plan for what she enjoys.
Or with many, many men.
I like how this guy, everything is if that's what she wants. If you need to alert the police. If that's what she wants.
If it's not considered statutory.
This guy is so out of it. Like, he's the weenie roast. He had the swimming party. He had this. The scavenger sale. All right, so let's see what else advice.
All right.
What are you doing over there?
Be right there.
Fine thing. As soon as Kay isn't around to supervise, you go off on a vacation.
You know, Maestro, I don't think your date ideas are so original.
What?
You're not
about
swell.
What to do on a date, I mean. But what I'd like to know is, how can you figure out what a girl would like to do? A certain girl, I mean.
We just told you, man. Yeah, over and over again.
I'd ask her, but, you know, women are not allowed to talk in 1958.
He's just, Bess is on a ladder, and he's just asking the other guys, like, what are you talking about? Like, why don't you get this already?
Well, you might ask her.
Oh, yeah, asking her.
Oh, that don't sound right.
Looking for you. Is he good company? He always seems so quiet.
Why did every girl from the 1950s have that horrible voice? Like,
they all sound like Donna Reed.
Get along all right. He's got a good sense of humor, and we haven't run out of things to say yet. He's kind of cute. You gonna date him again? I don't know. Besides, he hasn't asked you. George, get out of there.
I'm hungry.
Oh, George just swung onto the scene.
George is hungry at the scavenger sale. You know what that means.
Come and get it, everybody.
Oh.
Come on, we eat.
Let's go.
She's currently on a bed right now, everyone.
Hi, stranger.
I decided to come out of hiding.
Hey, this looks
from
good.
You.
You making
sandwiches? Flattery,
we'll get
Tito's
place.
Ah. Boy,
where should we go?
How about
over here?
Oh,
fine. Where should we go? How about over here in this creepy corner?
Yeah.
And then the friend's like, it's the scavenger sale, Mitch.
Come over here where my buddy is taping us.
And in the 50s, yeah. He'd be cranking.
I'm sure you like to do things like this.
You girls look swell.
What's that sound? Nothing?
College. Nothing.
Take them to fancy places. Spend lots of money.
Not this girl.
You know, I sort of like things like this, too. You won't laugh. I like to go on bicycle trips, too.
Do ya?
Do you? Douche.
And miniature golf. You're not bad.
Yeah, and weenie roasts and square dances.
And baseball games and taffy pull. I think they're swell.
Say, you
so
like
I
to do lots of things,
on
don't
square
you?
Dancing and taffy poles is what you're telling
say,
me.
Say, Kay.
Weenie roast,
next
too.
Friday, okay. There's going to be a weenie roast. Or there'll be a bowling party if you'd rather do that. Or we could go to the band concert.
Oh, I'd enjoy going to the weenie roast very much. Unless you'd rather go bowling.
No, I'd rather go to the weenie roast.
This is the worst couple ever.
If Jeff goes with Phyllis, we could double date with them.
Hey, Nick, hey, come on, we're going to break off the ice cream.
Okay, be right there.
Unless you don't like ice cream, in which case I won't go there.
It's a date.
Yeah, Matthew.
Yes, there are lots of things to do on dates. If you know how to look for them, if you plan them with the other person in mind, and if you really try to make sure each date's a good time.
Okay.
If you do these things.
Yes.
You'll know what to do on your day.
Okay.
So, I mean, great stuff there. Great.
Oh,
everyone calls them the glory days. Like, people are just retarded. Do not tell me people have not evolved. Would you like to go to the weenie roast? If you don't like that, there's a swimming day. And if you don't like that, there's a parade. And if not, we can go to the scavenger hunt. If not, we can go see the band. Give it up, Mitch. One thing. Two options, maybe. Not 37. We all know women, how they are. First off, they'll be like, I don't know. You decide. Yeah. But what are you going to do? I don't know what I feel like. You know, I'm happy with anything. But, you know, in the mind, he's like, you better make the right choice.
His buddy's like, well, you got to figure out something to do. I don't know what to do. He listed off 30 different things.
I just don't know if I could take them to the weenie rolls.
Do girls like weenie rolls? No, Jimmy. No woman have ever liked a weenie roast.
Do I bring my own weenies?
Jimmy was a special type of kid.
No, it should just be called How to Date Retards. Retards First Date. Like they're like setting him up like, please, just go. It's the scavenger hunt, man, or whatever the hell it is. But anyway, Bertie, I hope this works for you.
Okay, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I'm not finding anything scavenger sale New Jersey on Google. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, Berlew, so much for keeping it nice and short today, nice and trim. We ended up going longer than usual, but, you know, sometimes you're in the flow of things.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
I don't want to stop. And, hey.
I don't want to wait.
I pay my hosting fee, so I could do 10 hours on here. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So deal with
that. I give nothing, so I don't know why you keep bringing me back.
But anyway, we're coming to the end here. So first, I'd like to thank Augie Carton for coming on, and hope to talk to him again and go sample some fine brews down there. It's a great brewery, so please check him out. Berlew, anything to promote?
I will just promote my page, facebook.com/TheBerlew721. Last few Walking Dead have been quite dreadful, so... My Tonight on the Walking Dead have been quite entertaining, so keep an eye on that, and I will post you on certain dates of upcoming events.
Yes. I got a couple of things here. It would go remiss if I did not mention something that happened this week.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute tragedy. I don't know if anybody saw it, but there was a shooting in Rahway, New Jersey. A 21-year-old kid lost his life. And it turned out to be the son of a comedian friend, Bobby Gaines, who we booked for the Verbal Shenanigans show, the second one, I believe it was.
That's correct.
So absolutely a tragedy.
Sad for the family, sad for a really great guy. Like, every time we bring up Bobby, it's like the guy has no ego. He has no, when he goes to gigs, it's not like, oh, I have an agenda to promote this and that. He just goes out, has fun. Seems like his son was equally just like him, and it's just so sad.
Yeah, absolute tragedy. I was able to take a collection, get him some food and some money and things like that. But there's no like fund or anything. But I had to mention that if you look up the story. So I don't know if there's any kind of fundraiser going on with that. But
I mean, we're working on it. And worst case, if you want to give it to anything, you know, contact Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, contact me. I can get you whatever you want, but look it up. And it happened at a sneaker store in Rahway. Mm-hmm. 21, okay, but awful news. I got to promote two things. Comedy show-wise, I'll be at Red's in Carlstadt again on March 18th. It's an all-Irish comedy show. It's Dave Durkin's room. KP Berg, Jackie Byrne, myself, and a whole bunch of other Irish comics. So that should be fun.
Duke O'Sullivan.
Johnny McMachlan. And on March 21st, I'm going to be on John Kulik's Comedy Circuit show, which is every Monday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Now, I'm not on every Monday night. I'm on that one. They asked me to come on. It is live any of the U.S. and in 93 countries at www.ustream.tv/channel/GS-radio, home of GS Radio. I would just Google
Did
that
you
one.
Get that?
Yeah, so just Google John Kulik's Comedy Circuit show. And I'll be on that on the 21st, and a couple comics that we know work on that, Dave Hutchnowski, Anthony Ennis, Shea Farrell, nice. Those guys. So I'll be on that, and we'll see what that brings. And I think that is I think that's it. So hopefully you learned a little bit.
4 hours to go, Scott.
This is part one of tonight's episode. tune in for 2 and 3. But again, I hope you learned a little bit about dating. I hope you learned a little bit about some great songs that have made and
beer.
So good night, people. Life is funny and laugh at it. Keep following us at iTunes and Stitcher and all that fun stuff. And leave a review. Leave a review. Twitter at VS Comedy. Good night. Keep the wind at your back.
Oh, we learned about death. I hope you learned very much about death.
Lots of freaking death.
Yeah. If you need any help with death, contact me.
He's a master at covering death. Goodbye, people.
Night.